I don't see anyone else here to record.
You want to try doing the intro?
How does the intro go again? Wait, welcome to the flip side.
I think I have it up.
Bored with the current narrative? Are you ready for something new? Something black? I'm your host, Bethany.
And I'm Alicia.
And this is the flip side. Home of the Different, the audio show where we have conversations from an alternate perspective.
You're ready for me?
I don't think so.
Wow. I want to know your name, man. I want to know if you got a man.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bethany is feeling effervescent and bubbly today.
We also just signed up for Spotify Premium, so I'll see if I can't slide the song in there. Slipping in there somewhere.
Spotify Premium music.
Spotify Premium music.
Nice. These chairs are so loud. Ladies and gentlemen, the flip side needs to upgrade to better chairs.
I went and got my folding chair so that I don't creak.
I went and got my folding chair.
Wow. I'm sorry.
Would you say that you were big mad or small mad about the folding chair?
I think it's a quality medium-sized mad here.
So...
I'm sipping tea for my sore throat, so if you hear the style clinkery of teacups, that's me.
Right, no sunken place, just sore throats.
So today is our Stranger Things episode.
Oh my god. So,
and it's a little late and we're sorry for that.
But I mean, we had literal medical issues.
Oh my god.
Alicia spent a week in the hospital, guys.
I don't want to get into it over much, but I spent a week in the hospital.
And she's fine now. And so now we're going to talk about some Stranger Things. But before we hop into the Stranger Things conversation, I want to talk about the Stranger Things meme that had me dying.
The one with Mike?
Yes.
The one with what I fondly have termed as asshole Mike?
Yo, it's literally just this meme.
Scumbag Mike.
Yo, it's literally just a meme of Mike standing in front of somebody's garage.
With the middle finger.
But his fingers are so long, first of all.
He looks like that middle finger looked like some Eminem homage.
Right. And like, haters will say it's Photoshop. But it also... It also looks like he's really, they made memes out of it, and it's really just quintessential like Gen X culture, like Snapchat shit and Musically looking shit and just sad boy memes and like
sad boy.
It was like, what did you call? What was your nickname for him?
What did you call? Scumbag Mike.
Scumbag Mike. He was really being Scumbag Mike, but it was hilarious and yeah. Maybe I'll find a picture of it and link it.
No, I really like that one. Like, got your girl upside down doing strange things. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Michael, go to your room.
Go to your tent.
Why does no one send Mike to his fucking room? He's an asshole.
Okay, but this is a decent segue because it's depicting the children as like...
they're coming into their own as asshole teens.
Literally, yes. And they're being overtly sexual and they're towing the line between...
11 because, and her fucking kissing.
Right, because we mentioned it in the Wild and Wacky segment from last week's episode, but like on some G shit, 11 was being a jerk to her father and has largely been being a jerk to her father the whole time. Mike is extremely badly behaved and rude, but I counsel that he was being thus because he was taking his cues from 11. That's your kid.
Yeah.
Right, and I also rescued everybody from the upside down, so I feel really superior. And I'm
clearly 14, important.
And I'm 13. Ugh. Nobody.
Your balls just dropped last week.
And so now there are themes where it's just like, I literally feel like specifically with the Stranger Things children, the Stranger Things cast, that I'm watching them grow up. I feel very protective of them. Mm.
Especially Millie Bobby Brown.
And Lucas and Dustin, I actually feel ridiculously protective of all of them except for like Will Byers because he wasn't really in the show season one like that.
He's still not really in the show.
I don't agree with that.
I feel like his character had such a minor role this season. It was mostly chasing behind the rest of the other characters and being tight that they didn't want to hang out with him.
I mean, that was a major plot point for him, but he was also literally the herald of the thrashing, the mind thrasher. What is it? Is that what
the
it's
mind
called?
Flare?
The mind flare. I don't know why I keep saying thrasher. I say it every time. But like, back to whether or not Will Byers was like in the show, I definitely think that he a major and slightly well, I definitely think that a major plot point was that he was like, oh my god, guys, why aren't we playing Dungeons and Dragons anymore? What the fuck? But like, he was also, as I said, like the herald of the mind flayer. And
it's a pretty important role.
Not only is it a pretty important role, I feel like the fact that he and Joyce were separately doing the same thing.
They always are. They're synced up.
Right. And I really, like, they're sort of driving that home. And I feel like it's the time, like, when you read a book and you're just slightly less invested in this character for whatever reason. Yeah.
It's not his chapter.
It's not his chapter. And that is my only critique of Stranger Things as a storytelling franchise. I love the Stranger Things universe and I love what they're doing and I love the plot, but like, Will Byers is not the protagonist, even though he is the person who drives the plot forward.
But see, I don't know what to make of that truly, because I would argue that the person who drives the major action of the plot is in fact the protagonist of the piece. Like, from a writing structure standpoint, Will is the main character, which is why I'm annoyed with his lack of presence in this season.
And that's literally the point that I'm making. I don't think that he has a lack of presence in this season. I think he has a lack of presence. Just period. He is a protagonist who I don't give a fuck about, really.
Ooh, like, so would you say that he's the sleeping beauty in this one?
Yes, that's exactly how I feel about Will Byers. And it's not that I think that he doesn't have an important role, and it's not that I don't think that he's the main character. It's that he spent the majority of season one in the Upside Down and we never really saw him. Yeah. And it feels like Mike is the main character, and maybe that is a plot device, because what we're doing is saying that because Mike is the leader of the group.
Yeah.
Mike is the leader of the group, but the protagonist of the story is supposed to be Will Byers. But we're also doing this thing conceptually and technically in that the story perspective shifts with the characters, and there are these myriad interarching plot lines. And
yeah, because I would also say that they might be even making a shift, because 11 does a lot of the driving action of the plot.
Right.
And so that definitely makes her, edges her out as like a top main character.
And especially in film and TV adaptations, there can be more than one protagonist. Like, we're very used to that storyline where it's just like, this is the hero of the hero's story. And I mean, yeah, but a good team-up tale really is about the fact that these two headlining niggas, or these four headline, like, it's really about the group,
yeah,
you know? And
there are a lot of them, though.
But yes, and you know that it, I don't want to say hierarchy, but you know that it falls into a certain category. Like, you know, even though Dustin is fire and important, he's not a main character. You know that
Dustin is the B story always.
I mean, but so too about Steve. Steve is the greatest babysitter that the world has ever seen, and he's not a main character.
Always.
Nancy is not a main character. Jonathan is not a main character. Lucas is not a main character. Max is not a main character. Billy was a main pro, was a was one of the antagonists this year, this
but
one.
But he was just a symptom of the mind flayer. Like, right. It wasn't even really Billy we were fighting. Like,
no, it was not. But he got to be centered. But it's just like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, the main characters of this story are actually 11, Mike, Will, and Joyce.
And Joyce.
Joyce Byers is one of the protagonists of this tale.
Oh, I just love her so much. Just god damn it, Winona Ryder, you endless queen of the night. Love her.
I do too.
Love her. Like, literally, they blackballed her from Hollywood for, like, stealing a shit mega fuck ton of stuff. And honestly, that just makes her even cooler. I love her.
Wait, what?
That's why there was a whole gap in Winona Ryder's career. After Beetlejuice and that other dope Edward Scissorhands, that was also Winona Ryder, she
Yes, it was.
Yes. She got caught shoplifting a shit mega fuck ton of stuff. Like, she had a problem. And she enrolled in, like, rehab, and they blackballed her out of work for, like, a decade. Stranger Things is Winona Ryder's comeback. Like, we haven't heard anything from Winona Ryder, and it's not for lack of trying. It's because they wouldn't give her work.
And Winona Ryder is doing great in the role. And one of the things, you know, okay, and so here's my take, because as a black woman, that tinges literally every single aspect of my life. Joyce Byers is a protagonist, in my opinion. And yeah. I think that Winona Ryder is acting the shit out of that role.
Oh, God, and here, Winona.
And here's the dual-edged sword that she I feel about more. The character that is Joyce Byers. Mm. She is simultaneously ridiculously empowering and ridiculously annoying.
Oh, my and gosh. And it's why. Because she's a white woman.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, as a black woman, I'm just like, this, like, I love her, and she's exactly the white woman you want on your side, but god damn.
I would never
want to run into Joyce when she wants something.
Like, not only that, Joyce is triggering for me, at least in certain scenarios, not because she's wrong, right? Okay, so here's a really good example of what I'm talking about. The fact that Joyce is shrill and yells a lot. We tapped in on this in the Wild and Wacky segment last week, but the fact that Joyce is, I like the fact that she is always right, but you're supposed to view her as hysterical. I think that that's the point. Because yeah. Joyce Byers is exactly the woman that everybody says doesn't make any sense and that we should be discounting, and she's almost always right. Joyce,
like, her track record for correct guesses on what is wrong is like...
Joyce,
her needle is in, like, the psychic range. Joyce is so good.
Joyce needs to be listened to, and part of the reason why she's shrill and yelling is because nobody listens to her despite the fact that she's always right. And so, here I am in my house when Joyce is just like, well, I'm just like, where is he? Where's my son? And I'm just like, find that nigga. And she's just like, I need to talk about the fucking magnets. And I'm just like, no, you do. And she's just like, what if that reactor, those people, you know that this is somehow tied to that thing.
Yes,
and everybody's
Joyce.
Just like, no, that was shut down years ago. And
oh
she's just
God.
Like, accept the magnets.
And like, and as a right. watcher, you're like, yes, Joyce, yes.
Right. But as a black woman, when Joyce starts yelling, it's not so much that I'm just like, shut up, Joyce. It's more that I'm just like, whoo, this feels dangerous. Why the fuck are you screaming like that? In my experience, when people are acting like that, it's because they want me to leave spaces or minimize myself.
Yeah.
In some way, shape, or form. Get her out of here!
And you know, it's so interesting
the differences
in reaction based on our racial standpoint, because I watched it and I was a little jealous of Joyce. Like, you can just shout about these things, and yeah, people think you're shrill, but when Joyce shouts long enough, people are so annoyed, they're just like, let me look into it to shut her the fuck up.
But that's
up.
Part of the reason why it's triggering.
That just doesn't happen for black women a lot. Usually when you get to the point where you're being on the shrill side as a black woman because nobody is listening to you, the next step is to push you out of the space instantly.
And it's not that Joyce
like,
hasn't
you
been,
gotta go
it's
because
not
you're
that
dangerous.
Joyce hasn't been outcasted, because she has.
Oh,
right?
She definitely has. She lives in a house at the edge of the wood,
right, by literally everyone except Hopper. They think that she's the mad woman down the way, right? Her son went missing and Joyce lost her mind because she's a single mom and she just snapped when her son went missing. Everyone except Hopper thinks that she's nuts.
Her
right?
son was her king,
right? Well, not
well.
I don't know whether that narrative is something that can even be applied
to Joyce.
But anyway, like, that's really black to me. But
I know it is.
What I was gonna say was, like, she definitely got isolated and blackballed. But I definitely agree with you. And part of the point that I was alluding to was that it feels violent, because I think that white women have weaponized their feminism against black women, specifically in the workplace, mad of the time. Like, mad of the time. It's exactly what I did, what I was looking to get out of as it pertained to admin work. We talked about that in the Flip and Burnout episode, the way that there are certain microaggressions that people can come up on you and just expect you to react a certain way as a black woman. And part of the reason why I was just like, oh, this feels dangerous, is because a lot of the time when white women start acting like that, one, I know that they're either acting like that about me or they're acting like that about something that will
indirectly impact me.
Right. Directly or indirectly cause me some kind of harm. Or two, they're acting that way to... it's annoying because I cannot reciprocate that energy.
Never. A black woman is never allowed to reciprocate that energy.
To look at Joyce Byers like you, in a way that it's hard to deal with, because she be out here screaming and I'm just like, this would never work.
No. Yeah, like, you know that if you were in Joyce Byers' situation, you would have to figure out some other way to get your son located. If the going story was starring a black woman, after they dragged that boy's body out of the lake in season one, they would have been done with single mom Shaquanda.
If DeWanda Wise was playing Will's mother?
Nope. And she would have went absolutely to jail. There would have been no cover-up about DeWanda's actions. Yes, there would have, but the cover-up would have been the whole shebang, and DeWanda would have been in jail because you broke into private property, and they would have thrown the rule book at you, and that's what they do with black women. Never mind that you were right about the fact that your son was not dead. Never mind that you stumbled onto a conspiracy that endangered the town that you lived in. Never mind that you're a fucking hero. Well, you trespassed on government property, and that makes you a criminal. And so 3 years in jail, Shaquanda.
3 years, and if you're lucky.
If you're lucky. And that would have been the story. Shaquanda would have been in jail for the rest of her life.
And she would have been Sandra Bland in season two.
Yeah. And because there would have been a huge cover-up about what were the circumstances surrounding her arrest, because she did in fact uncover an illegal facility that wasn't supposed to be there.
Exactly.
Would have been that story. And the little boy would have went missing or been brainwashed in some way and sold into foster care or given to another family. And that would have been a whole other story about how this grown-ass black man uncovers this trauma from his childhood and uncovers the story of where his...
that so that we can do some browner things.
Oh.
Bom, bom, bom. And I want to go on record as saying here that it is not Stranger Things' fault that it's a white show. Right?
No, very well written. I really love it. It's a great show.
Not only is it extremely so much well enjoyment. Written and a great show, and I enjoy it, I am not trying to pontificate or say that we can't tell stories about towns that are predominantly white.
Oh yeah, and like I'm not trying to like fire pot shots
it's
at
great.
It.
Even though I think that I want more black people in everything and I want more black everything, that doesn't mean that I want white people to just stop making shit. I just want white people to let black people make more shit.
Yeah, but like it is plausible that in a hick town, like wherever the heck they are, that Lucas and his family is the black people.
Right.
That are around.
And here's the deal. Like, because I brought that caveat out to say I don't have no problem with this show being white. Yeah. I'm just telling you how it feels to experience it as a black lady.
Yeah, no, I really
it's literally
love that.
Just the caveat that I'm throwing out there. Mm-hmm. But I do also kind of want to talk about, I feel like we went in pretty deep last time when we talked about Nancy and Jonathan, but we did not, as a continuation of the Will Byers talk, go that deep into the like fact that he's completely and totally uninterested in girl.
Ooh, I thought that was very, very fun. And they left that so ambiguous. They left that such an ambiguous little bit there. Like, we don't know what his sexuality is at all. And I think I feel like they might have to come out with a concrete sexuality for Will in the future. But I feel like for now, it makes the ambiguity of it creates a level of inclusion that's really, really nice. Like, I assumed that Will was gay in that interaction, but I think it was you who brought up that he could be asexual. And I really enjoy that idea.
the idea that he's just not, he's just an innocent young man. He's right. not trying
and
to
then
do that.
Here's the other thing cool. that I've thought about since, even taking away sexuality out of it, right? Like, maybe he's just developing more slowly because he's been through some shit. Maybe
he has been right. through some
maybe
shit.
Maybe he's just developing more slowly because he, you know what I mean? Like, he's been.
He really lost a year with his friends. Like, yeah. even though I feel like Will took a backseat in this season, I felt like where he was coming from was such a poignant place. Yeah. He really lost a lot of time with his friends. He lost 2 years with them. Yeah. 1 year being in the upside down and the next being possessed by something from the upside down. Upside down. Will hasn't really and truly played with his friends in dumb long. Will got snatched from them in the middle of a D&D game.
Which is literally
of course
why
that's what he wants to
which
do.
Which is literally why I'm not super mad about that plot line. Like, I think that it is important, one, for young kids to see how things play out, because here's the gag. That shit is going to continue to happen to you throughout your life, mm-hmm. in that you are going to be in different developmental stages than the people around you, and that you will, and that will be painful.
Right, and if you want to keep them around, there needs to be a lot of patience on the end of both parties.
Right, because if you, and a lot of open communication, and a lot of healthy dialogue, and a lot of real nigga boundaries, because like when you get to the season when you're an older person and you're the last friend who's not married, you're gonna feel away a lot of the time. When you everybody is married and suddenly you're the only one who doesn't have kids, the one friend who doesn't have kids be feeling put upon. If you're the first one to have kids in your friends group, you feel put upon.
Yeah.
If you're the first one to get married, sometimes you feel put upon because it's just like, is my husband a member of my friend group? I now have this whole other family dynamic, life dynamic that these people who have been a member of part of my life this whole time don't
have to deal with.
Right.
Yeah.
And that shit keeps happening.
Yeah.
And it's mad painful. And I think the scene where Will and
your best friend gets a boyfriend and you don't, and all of a sudden she doesn't have time for you.
And like, there's a healthy balance, right? Because on the one hand, you gotta let your friend have her man. And on the other hand, you can't suddenly be a shitty friend because you have a man.
And that's a hard line to toe for a lot of people.
That's a hard line to toe, irrespective of what the parameter is. And that's how I feel that it is for Will and Mike.
Yeah.
That scene where they was at in the garage and Will was running away into the rain.
When
and
Will was dumping Mike's ass.
Right. And right. And Mike was like, wow, did you really think that we was just going to stay in our basement forever and never get girlfriends? And Will was just like, yeah, I kind of did.
I wanted to hug him so much in that
too.
Moment.
And
like, no, baby.
And I like with the fact that you brought up that he's been without these niggas for 2 years and that he was literally robbed because he was
he's
solo.
He's crying out for their attention. He was really robbed of time with them.
And they were not, because even though they were robbed of time with him, equal time with him, they had each other.
Yes, and he was very much alone. And their time spent together without him have solidified some relationships that he missed out on. Mm-hmm. He didn't. There was no way for there wasn't even a way for him to truly compete for Max's attention. He was sick the whole season. Mm-hmm. He wasn't interested in Max, and he was physically ill.
Yep.
He wasn't, when 11 came around, he wasn't even there.
Right.
There was no way for him to make, even if he was interested in girls, there was no way for him to bond with either of the girls or make a move on either of them. He didn't have fair game with those girls.
The other thing is, and, you know, it does feel this way when you're that age, there are more than two girls. Like, it didn't have to be that all of us were vying for these two girls' attention, and that's always how it is. But, like,
they were definitely vying for Max's attention and Eleven's attention, but in a lower key way, and the only place that she could really stay was Max's place, so it worked out beautifully for Mike, I mean.
Mike, I don't want to say claims his territory because that's terrible phrasing, but like, Max and 11 had a bond before anybody else had a bond, and it was just sort
you
of
mean big. Mike and 11.
Yes.
I said Max and
Mike and 11, right. Sorry, Mike and 11 just had a bond that was obviously there from the very very beginning, and it was sort of apparent at the from jump
deep
that Mike, at the very least, was in love with her.
Yeah, he's been in love with her
from
the whole time.
Waffles.
Yeah, he saw her bald ass.
And he was in love.
He was like, who is this powerful woman? I need her in my life.
Let us be glad because is 11 not graduating and blossoming into such
a powerful
woman? Ooh, let's talk about the season finale. 11. And you know, my partner and I, as we were watching the season, the whole time my partner specifically was just like, 11 is using her powers too often. 11 is using her powers too. 11 is overusing her. They're really using the fuck out of 11's powers this season. And lo, poof, at the end of the season, 11 don't have no powers. Oh, sweetie, you tore a muscle. Yikes. And how long has it been? 6 months?
Her daddy's dead now.
Oh my God, she tore a muscle and she's emotionally hurt. Like, we learned in season 2 that her powers are activated by anger. She's going through a deep grief period right now. Maybe her powers need a break. That makes perfect sense to me.
I really love some of the allegorical themes that show up in this show, like as it pertains to darkness and as it pertains to like a mind flayer, when things take over your mind, like the parallels that we could be drawing to mental illness across all of this is so good. Like,
and the fact depression. That it still just has a hold on Will. Will always knows when it's around.
He always knows. And he feels isolated because of it, and it stole time away from him when he was physically in another place and then when he was recovering from it. I vibe with that shit so much. You go, you become depressed, and it's like, I literally was depressed for X amount of time. And then I wasn't depressed, but I was so busy healing myself that I was completely, as you said, unavailable for socialness. And
now that I'm back, you guys don't seem to want to fucking hang out with me anymore.
It's because we're different people and you kept moving and I did not, and I lost 2 years with you.
Yo, like, it's hard.
That's
I really
like
the show a lot.
Yeah,
like,
man.
I think that there are so many just positive themes there.
An update from our Wild and Wacky segment, though, because at that time, spoilers, Hopper hadn't died and neither had Billy.
Oh,
but Billy. I want to revisit a couple of things Bill that I Fred. Said. I don't feel any differently about what I think Hopper should be held accountable for, but I did weep a little bitchy weep when that sad ass misogynist died. And
I don't believe that he's dead.
Maybe he's not. But even so, I still was sad.
Yeah.
It's still sad as fuck.
I'm just like, why can't Joyce get a fucking date? Is really how I felt about
me
that.
Too. I was felt like, the same way.
Wow.
I was like, just like, Joyce can never be happy.
Literally every time Joyce even expresses a little bit of interest in the man, they kill off the
kill
man.
Kill him.
Like, y'all killed Samwise Gamgee.
Like,
I get why she's still in mourning for Bob. He was the perfect man.
But
I bet you he was mad huggable at night. He was perfect.
And then it's like, but Billy, I wish that Billy had had the opportunity to change, but it was not available.
No.
And he went out like a champ, and he needed to.
Right. And the way that he went out, it's like, it was an oversell and an undersell, because they definitely tried to allude to a turnaround in Billy's character. But to be honest, if we back up off of the emotions of what's happening and we look at it, it doesn't take that much human decency to want to protect your own sister from something that is literally trying to rip her apart in front of you. Come on. What kind of human would Billy really have been to have come back to his senses in that moment and let Max be captured? Come on. And like, the person that he was when we first met him, like, learning about Billy's traumatic past doesn't erase the
traumatic infliction that he was.
Yes, the way they introed him. Like, the way they introed him, like, doesn't really hold up as congruent to how Max felt about him in this season.
And that in no way means that he deserved to die.
Right. Like, I wish we had had time to see the turnaround. I agree with you.
Right.
Because it's just like, in season 1, Billy was this over-controlling older brother who may or may not have been abusing Max when we weren't looking. We didn't know what was up with Max and Billy. I was completely and totally, there were a couple of instances that was foreshadowed when Billy would be having these tense moments with Max and they're super keyed up and it's just like, you look like you're about to reach out and slap that girl.
And I wouldn't be surprised if she had had bruises that you had inflicted upon
this
her
is,
because
I
she seemed violent and dangerous.
And especially after we saw the scene where Billy was getting manhandled by Dad. I'm just like, so you're getting hit. It makes perfect sense that you would lash out at your younger sister. But that is the antagonistic perspective of Billy that I expected to see this season. And not only was that not what happens with Billy, Billy and Max seem to have this sort of backstory that has never been alluded to. She really, really cared about Billy. And I'm just like, that makes sense, obviously, because he is her brother.
She always really, really cared about Billy.
I don't know. Like, yo, she was really trying to reach him. And I'm just like, I don't know if you had that relationship with Billy. Like, it doesn't feel like it stacks up with what they were doing in season one. In season one, she seemed very angry with Billy.
She did seem angry with Billy, and she also seemed like
kind of grossed out by Billy also.
She seemed like the sister who's just like, he's mean, he's an asshole, and he's stupid. And in this season, they're a little older now. You can act like, okay, so there's distance, whatever the case is. Now she's just like, he's still mean, but he's so busy having sex, he doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
Billy is gross and mean.
Gross. It seems to have been the overarching feeling that Max was giving off about Billy this season.
He's disgusting.
My older brother is gross. Let's just not focus on
Everybody
him.
Everybody should leave him alone. Don't bother Billy. Billy is gross. Let's not talk about it. But that sort of tracks for where the kids are in their lives.
Just happy screams.
And it's not so much. And the other thing that I wanted to say was I sort of felt like Max, even though she hated Billy, she still hates Billy. But I always got an undercurrent vibe of, damn, older bro, why don't you love me? I love you so much. What the fuck is this? Come on. Why don't you think I'm cool? I skate.
Why don't you think I'm cool? I skate.
God, Billy.
And it's just like, and they had that
so
little.
So mean to me for no reason.
They had that little moment in Billy's memories where like, this is your new younger sister, and it was just like Billy clearly cared about her. But I'm just like,
in that scene,
you know, he walked up to her. They fitted into the Billy's been abused montage, and so I'm just like. Okay, maybe. Clearly this marks a turning point in his life, but I'm just like, you throwing up a flashback about Billy's alleged bond with Max that may or may not have formed is not enough.
And see, I probably painted that situation with, colored that situation because I thought in that montage what they were saying was Billy's dad, after Billy's mom died, married this other bitch, and then here came Max, and he was just like, wow, this is part of the trauma.
Well, that would certainly track with a story where Billy didn't like Max that much and kind of backhanded her occasionally.
I mean, that's exactly how I read that scene. I was just like, because we had seen also that Billy was just like, we were flashing through the fact that his father was rough with him and didn't give a fuck about the fact that he was playing on the beach. And I was just like, and then mom died and then you married some bimbo and brought a new daughter.
Now I just have a sister.
Mommy. And I'm just like, why? Why?
Just a deep dive on Billy's character. I think it's really interesting that Billy very traumatically watched his mother die, was abused by his father, and then decided that the thing he was going to do was become a womanizing sort of sexual almost predator. He's not a predator. But he has a very predatory air about him.
Right. We don't have any evidence of the fact that he's a predator, but we know that he's dangerous. We know that he's violent. We know that he's a womanizer. And we know
that he has
a bully.
And see, that's not even what I'm pointing to. I'm especially pointing to the fact that Billy lost his mother and then dove into older women's vaginas.
I 100% get that. And what I'm saying is we don't have any proof of anything in the show that says that he's like a sexual assaulter motherfucker.
No,
but we definitely have proof of the fact that this nigga has a complex as it pertains to both womanizing and older women in general.
Like, yo.
But that's not weird is where I was gonna
Not weird. It's interesting.
It's interesting, but that's basic. Not basic, but like that's run of the mill. It's not wild. Like,
I see you, Billy.
Right. It's not wild that you watched your mom tragically die, except you treat women like shit.
And now you have a thing for older blondes. Do you miss your mommy, Billy?
Yeah. I also really like, and we touched on it briefly, but I also really like Maxine and Eleven's budding girlfriendship.
Aww.
It is so nice. I think another...
See, the girls being girls.
I think that another theme is the children getting to be children because their childhoods have been snatched away.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that happened with Will. We talked about that. But that also happened with Eleven. Her literal childhood was ripped away. Her literal memories were ripped away. She's never a child.
That girl is a weapon, and she's discovering how to be a girl.
Oh my gosh, she had so many questions. It's so easy to forget, I guess, because you're seeing her now and have seen her largely only within the parameters of being around all these other kids to like really get and internalize the fact that Eleven been in a tank for years, experimenting on for years. Like, we're lucky she can talk.
Yeah, she still don't talk much. She doesn't speak in full sentences, really.
No.
Even now. Like, her sentences are choppy and really, really short.
Makes perfect sense. Why you treat me like garbage?
I dump your ass.
I dump your ass.
Yes, Eleven, yes. Like, my heart just bled with pride when she dumped Mike's ass.
You know when my heart bled the first time?
I was like, queen!
When she called Max and then the scene cut to the two of them in the bedroom and she was literally spilling her heart out and she was just like, and then he said that his Nana died.
Oh my God. And I didn't even see that scene coming because of how they had butt heads when they first... Oh my, I was blindsided.
Me too.
I was like, oh, they're having a girl's night! Oh!
And that shit made my heart shatter for real because they were...
Like, she needs this.
And I really like the fact that they did that. That they showed two girls who started off feeling stereotypically jealous of one another and fighting about boys and shit. And literally made them come together as an allied force.
About these same boys.
About these same boys and not getting over on them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, don't let him treat you like shit. Here's what you say.
I pulled up here and threw this bitch against a wall because I was just like, do you like my man?
His Nana died? That is a lie. And it was a lie.
We have come yes, full
Max.
Circle.
Yes, Max. Oh, his Nana died? That is a ridiculous falsehood, Eleven. He is treating you like garbage. You need to ask him why the fuck he's doing that.
Don't let him treat you like garbage.
Don't let him treat you like garbage, Eleven.
We're
gonna go shopping because that's what bitches do when niggas is treating them like garbage. We are gonna go on the attack and we have to look like bad bitches before we do that.
And
that is such solid woman advice.
And the part where Eleven, I love the advice that Max gave her. We go to the store and you keep trying things on until you find something that feels like you.
Yes.
And then she just picked out this bold print.
It was
and
so cute. Like, I wanted her outfit. I was just like, give me a fucking outfit.
You are such a fucking woman. And they're doing a thing with the stages of Eleven. Like, Eleven has had a bunch of iconic looks in a way that the boys have not.
Like, do you remember her bold goth face?
Yes. Bold Eleven in the pink dress and the denim jacket. And then we have Eleven when she was a badass goth phase. And she was, you know, hair slicked back in the motorcycle jacket. And then we have Eleven in... as the season finale of season 3 where she had some hair but it wasn't
then the little dress
right, and now we have Eleven in this, you know, she's got this shoulder length bob situation.
I'm turning into a teenager
and she's giving
young
me
girl.
She's giving me vibes. She's giving me Babysitter's Club chic. She's like slaying everything in my pattern.
Oh, Eleven,
I want Eleven's wardrobe.
You know whose wardrobe I want? Nancy Wheeler.
No, Nancy's wardrobe is like,
I hate her shoes. I you know what? I didn't even see that bitch's feet. Her outfits, I never saw her feet, you know? I was not focused on them.
And it's so whack because when I look at an outfit, your shoes is the first thing I look at. That looks fire, but did you fuck it up?
Oh my God, you're such a judgmental Judy. I love it.
I feel like that's what shoes are, and that's why I hate footwear and love footwear at the same time because I'm just like, this outfit is so fire, and the only thing that I have to wear with is sneakers, which means that the outfit sucks now.
Do sneakers make an outfit suck?
Not inherently, but if the shoe is wrong, is my point, is the outfit sucks, even if it would be a fire outfit with the right shoes.
Gasp, I really like sneakers.
Again,
but it's true, I do be looking pulled together in a way that I never achieve when I don't have shoes on.
And it's just like, sneakers is not inherently ruining an outfit. I love wearing sneakers with dresses, but I love looking like I did that on purpose and not like this is the only shoe that I could find to wear today. Yeah. When you look like this is the only shoe I could find to wear today, or
you just automatically come off as bedraggled.
And invariably, if it looks like, why did you wear that shoe with this outfit?
Yeah.
That can't be the way that it rolls off. Otherwise, I just feel like now your outfit is whack. It's like when your whole face
shots
is beat.
Fired at my whole wardrobe.
Now, no, you have fire shoes.
Thank you.
And it's like when your whole face is beat except your brows ain't done.
Oh, that used to be me perpetually before
that
I knew
perpetually.
That you could just do your brows. Yo, I remember when Jenna Marbles was new, that bitch read me for filth. She was just like, oh, you know, what about the girls who don't put makeup on their brows? And then she makes fun of them and goes, what? Makeup can go on brows? And I was watching that video and literally we did that at the same time because my react was, what? Makeup can go on brows? And it was just like, oh, see, this is why Jenna's just, thank you, Jenna.
Thank you, Jenna.
Thank you, Jenna. Because somewhere out there, Jenna Marbles is out there, and Jenna Marbles is the person that taught me that you need to put makeup on your goddamn brows. And I have never looked back. My look elevated that summer, and it has never come back down.
I still can't do my brows for shit, really. I be doing my best.
It's okay.
Sometimes it looks all right, sometimes it don't.
Sisters not twins.
Sometimes they are sisters, but the sisters are just ugly.
And speaking of well
you
made
don't want
up
Anastasia and Drusilla on your face, even though they related, you know.
Oh, but I'm moving on. So speaking of well made up women, Miss Wheeler surprised me.
Really?
Yes. I thought she was gonna go through with the affair with Billy.
She surprised me. I thought you were gonna say that she surprised you by being put together.
No. She surprised me by sticking with her family and her husband. Her husband fucking bores her, and you can tell. They have a lackluster sex life. She avoided the stereotypical hottie ending of ending up with the town jock who runs to fat, drinks, and hits her. She ended up with the boring nice guy, but she was clearly the town hottie before she settled down. It's clear he doesn't fuck her nice.
Do you understand what year it is, though?
Yes, I do understand what year it is. It's in the 80s. He falls asleep early and he leaves her alone. Especially because it's the 80s and there's much less ways to track your lady, I'm very surprised that she did not sneak out and get the D that night.
And I'm not, because the narrative of being, that's what's like feminism not is about, but like that's where it all comes from. The whole like, you supposed to be bored with your man. Don't nobody give a fuck whether or not you feel sexually liberated. You're not supposed to. Who gives a fuck? And you don't live in a metro.
No.
Like, she lives in a rural area, a backwater town. This is not a city metropolis.
And she's still the hottest thing in town.
Right. And it's not a city metropolis with a diverse population like New York. We have a privilege where it's just like we are used. There is a privilege in being used to being around mad different kinds of people and not having that humdrum, boring, uniform life. Back in those days, and I'm not trying to say like it was 800 million years ago, the 70s, the 80s, whatever fucking year it was, 84 or whatever, in a rural Hicksville town with a one black family, you're supposed to, all the women gather by the swimming pool to flirt with the local pool boys and never
cheat on their husbands, who are probably cheating on them with women 10 years younger than them, even though their husbands are boring like mayonnaise and paste and they won't go to the doctor.
Yeah.
Like, that's the story.
And if you do cheat, it gets out and spreads like wildfire and your life is ruined because everyone in the neighborhood actively knows you.
And it's not that nobody cheats, because of course people be cheating, but it's just like, there are so many memoirs that are literally about the fact that there was this tawdry emotional affair that I was having with the pool boy or the guy at the lifeguard.
The emotional affair with the pool boy.
We almost, we would flirt disgustingly and it made me feel alive. I mean, if you leave...
I came out in my negligee while he was cleaning the pool.
And it's just like, if you leave it to go on long enough, I'm sure eventually they would have cracked and had sex with each other. But eventually. The other thing
But
is,
Billy died, so...
But the other thing is, Billy probably would have hit and has hit the rest of the town who's willing to fuck him already.
Yeah, like, Billy seems to get around.
Well...
And speaking of getting around... Side A is tired.
And I was just about to say, we just got food, so
it's time for us to go. Don't forget to like, subscribe, share, and rate Flipside content. You can follow us on Facebook at the Flipside Podcast. You can follow us on Instagram at Flippant. And join us next week for whatever the freak we decide to talk about then.
Wild and wacky segment, that bitches. Catch you on the what?
Catch you on the flip.
Catch you on the flippity flip.
Good night.
Good night.
This audio show is brought to you by The Letter A for the Anchor Podcast Lab, where the flip side is recorded and hosted. If you want your voice featured on this side, leave us a voice note via the Anchor Podcast. If you love the flip side, share it, but don't change it or sell it. The Flip Side can be found on iTunes, SoundCloud, and all your favorite podcasting players, including, of course, Anchor. Be sure to like, subscribe, and follow us. Till next time, see you on the flip.
Cool. I love it. All right. We out.